For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, was mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht, komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und willkommen zu Gegenpressing, der Bundesliga-Podcast. I'm Manu Fed, he's Stefan Bielkowski, and also joining us on the show today is Matt Ford. And Matt, first to you, because you haven't been on in a while. How's it going?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Had a bit of a semi-weekend off this weekend, but kept half an eye on what was going on, obviously. Actually, a bad weekend to take a weekend off, given there were three really big games. But I kept an eye on them as best as I could, so I'll try and contribute where I can.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure you will be contributing plenty, as always. And Stefan, how are you? How was your travel back to Scotland? Last time we spoke, we were still in Hamburg. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm a lot more relaxed than the last time we spoke in Hamburg, because I was at a very, very busy airport in Hamburg. Which, just to kind of give people some sort of idea, it took one of my colleagues 90 minutes to get through security.
Madness. So,
needless to say, prior to this show recording, the three of us were sharing our recent woes with the German transport system. But yeah, I'm back in Scotland, back in the middle of nowhere, and all the happier for it. That big trip to the big city is done and dusted, so I'm happy back on my farm.
I was on the only flight from Hamburg to Munich that didn't get cancelled that day, Stefan. Which, of course, anyone who listens to the show knows the deprivation I had to undergo to actually get to Hamburg in the first place was quite a relief. Also, for anyone listening to the show, there's some bonus material for you right here. Hamburg travel tip. You can book a slot for security. So you can book a slot anytime between 3 days before your flight and 3 hours before your flight. So if you go to Hamburg and you want to leave Hamburg on time, book a security slot. It meant that I was through security in 15 minutes rather than the 90 minutes that it took you guys. So yeah, I highly recommend this to anyone who needs to travel to Hamburg. It makes your life a lot easier. Guys, travel
was
tips
that, flight. Was that the advert? So you've been
we're sponsored by Hamburg. What is it? What's the airport called? Helmut Schmidt Airport.
We're doing really well for getting sponsored by Hamburg Airport.
No, we wouldn't. Obviously, they don't have any money considering how shitty their security is.
Oh, well, there goes any hope of us being sponsored by Hamburg Airport.
We're not sponsored by the Deutsche Bahn or the Hamburg Airport, so you can be honest about either one of those products on this show, Stefan. We are being sponsored, though. Let's do the sponsoring thing first, and then we'll talk about all the football action this week. This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting actions and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions, with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to Bet Online today and use our promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Guys, before we jump into the games, and I mean, this was, what did the Bundesliga sell this at, Matt? The super weekend, top weekend, they had some fancy sounding name for it. The DFL trying to sell this, of course, and it was a great weekend of football. You need to highlight this, but of course, the big news is, and this broke just before we went on the show, is that the 36 clubs of the first and second division have agreed on starting negotiations with a potential investor. We had a bonus show on this in the past, where we broke down the initial vote that failed, where the Bundesliga clubs rejected this. They needed a two-thirds majority. They got it. My understanding is that 10 clubs voted against it. And so that's gone through. We don't have all the details yet. And if you are interested in the details, Stefan, I think our plan is to do a bonus show, right?
Yeah, we'll probably do that. We'll record it tomorrow, and it'll be out Wednesday, I'd imagine. We usually do the transfer roundup show, but we'll definitely have it out this week. Depends when the details come out and what gets said. We don't want to go too soon before we have all the details, but we'll definitely be doing a bonus show on it with Matt, presumably. So if anyone's want to deep dive in that, do subscribe to the Substack, where you get two extra podcasts every week, as well as some newsletters from the three of us.
Yeah, exactly. Some little details there. I've been told the details or some more details are going to be out later on Tuesday, or Monday, sorry. So we're recording this right now. It should be out later today. Okay, guys, let's dive into the football. Bayern against Frankfurt. This is a shocking result, at least. I don't think... Stefan, we predicted both, I think, a Frankfurt defeat here. I think I said on the previous show that I think this is going to be more difficult for Bayern Munich than they originally anticipated. That was an understatement, wasn't it? I mean, they just got smashed in the first half, and it didn't get any better in the second half. The final result, 5-1. The last time this happened, of course, was in 2019. In November 2019, with a certain Niko Kovac in charge. 24 hours later, he was gone. He was fired. Thomas Tuchel still in charge. I don't think there is going to be a sacking imminent, but the noise out of here in Munich has been that Christoph Freund, he was on Doppelpass the next day. This is the sporting director, and he was quite honest in his determination that January is going to be quite busy for the club, with them making many changes with the squad. And, you know, Stefan, I think when you look at this result, what became very apparent here is that they not only have problems in defense, where they really struggled, but also in midfield. You know, I wrote in one of the articles that I wrote this week that it was Frankfurt went through Bayern's midfield and defense like a hot knife through butter. It was just way too easy for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was such a bizarre game because, you know, on the one hand, you had this Frankfurt side who have really struggled, actually, in the Bundesliga lately. You know, they obviously lost 2-1 to Augsburg the week before. They lost to Stuttgart the week before that. And then they drew to a very poor Werder Bremen team the week before that. So, you know, that's kind of why we did go into this game thinking, you know, 9 out of 10 times Bayern are always favourites, of course, for these games. So it's not exactly... It wasn't exactly a hot take or anything like that. But I think what ended up playing out was, you know, Frankfurt felt they maybe had a point to prove. It also just kind of felt like, you know, Bayern had that extra weekend off because the Union Berlin game had been cancelled the week before because of snow, and they just looked a real yard or two off the pace. I was really quite startled by just how bad and error-prone that defence was. You know, going back to that kind of Davies slip up in the first couple of minutes that led to the first chance for Frankfurt, to the manner which Kim's just getting knocked off the ball with shoulder tackles, Mazurui in the lead up to the first goal, just a very lazy clearance of Meccano kind of getting turned by Larsson for one of the goals. And then, as we were discussing at the time and in the group chat, Manuel Neuer looking very, very, very old for some of the attempts he made to save those shots. And, you know, I guess we'll see against Man United this week whether that was just a case of them looking a little rusty and needing to get back into the swing of things, or if these are kind of deeper issues, because I do look across our back line, and we've talked about it a lot, quite a lot this season, that it's an error-prone defence at the best of times, and usually it's just one or two players that are off form, but it felt like all four of them were out of form. And the thing I do keep coming back to with this Tuchel side is that while there definitely have been improvements in attack, you know, we've talked a lot about Leroy Sané and Harry Kane and how they've linked up tremendously well. But I'm really struggling to think about a defensive player at Bayern who's actually improved since Tuchel came in. And if I was a Bayern fan, I'd be concerned not only by the fact that Davies seems to be getting worse by the week. Mazurui looks like someone who's won a raffle to play in that Bayern team. Pippa Meccano hasn't really made any improvements, but perhaps most notably, Kim actually looks like he's getting worse compared to what he was doing last season at Napoli. And it just kind of feels like maybe the defence is neglected, and maybe it's just kind of having to play second fiddle to, you know, Bayern's attacking intent, because obviously domestically Bayern basically have to throw everything at these teams to sit deep. I'm not saying that's what Frankfurt did in this game, but in general. But I don't know, I think it was a game that really highlighted each individual defensive player in that team and what they're capable of doing mistake-wise. And it might be a one-off, but I think if you look at the stretch of time that Tuchel's been in charge of the club, I'm really struggling to think if any of those players have actually really thrived or gotten better under him.
What's your thoughts here, Matt?
My first thoughts from a Manchester United point of view are that we're in for a bit of a spanking on Tuesday night, aren't
yeah.
we?
Yes. We all know what happens with Bayern Munich when they get a result like that, right? It's not Stuttgart that have to worry here, it's United that have to worry here.
Well, exactly. That was Bayern's third defeat of the season after the last two. The first one was in the Super Cup, I believe, wasn't it? Okay, glorified friendly, but they came back and won the first Bundesliga game 4-0 away at Bremen. After they got knocked out of the cup in Saarbrücken, they went and put four past Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
And if Bournemouth can put three past United, then anyway, let's see how that one goes. I think, as Stefan was saying, it was a game where I think everything, all across the pitch, everywhere where Bayern weren't 100%, and they were nowhere near it. They were 70-80% all across the pitch. It was absolutely ruthlessly exploited by Frankfurt, one of the best performances in weeks. Side of the back, Manuel Neuer doesn't give a good impression at all, particularly on that second goal where it sneaks past with the near post. Joshua Kimmich giving the ball away. Time and time again. Okay, he makes up for a little bit with a good finish for his own goal, but can't be giving away balls midfield like that. Upamecano, same applies to him. It's not the first time we've said that. I think even most damagingly, he gives the ball away in dangerous positions where he then doesn't have the pace to get back in position. I think that was the case for at least one of the goals in the second half. Might have been the fourth, if memory recalls, where he finds himself well out of position after having given the ball away. We also mentioned Kim Min-jae getting muscled off the ball, which is surprising. One of the things I've been struck by this season, the few games that I've actually watched Bayern live and really got an impression of the close up, is how big Kim Min-jae is. He's an absolute unit of a player. And yeah, the last time I saw him was at Mainz when he was knocked off the ball in the final minutes by the Mainz kid whose name I have forgotten. That's the one. Also not a skillful player, but not the biggest, and only a kid. He knocked him off during a dribble on that occasion. This time was Ansgar Knauf in the build up to the second goal, I think. Who brushed him aside. That must be concerning. And I honestly don't know what the situation is between Thomas Tuchel and Thomas Müller. I think Maxim Choupo-Moting is a lot of things. I think he can lead the line extremely well. I think he's a good outlet. I think he can hold the ball up well. I think with enough game time behind him, with a bit of rhythm behind him, he can be a good finisher, although he didn't really show that against Cologne the last time that I saw Bayern. However, a number 10 in the creative sense of Thomas Müller, he's absolutely not. Now, I know it's fluid. I know you'd be expecting Harry Kane to be dropping into those positions a lot, and he does, although to much less effect against Frankfurt, as he has been doing throughout the season. But yeah, there you go, from top to bottom, it didn't click for Bayern, and they were ruthlessly exploited. And all I think it's to Frankfurt, because, I mean, if you're going to exploit Bayern, then do it in the way they did. And it was a great return to form for them after, I think it was 4 defeats in a row, 5 games without a win. But I think the last time we spoke, or at least last time I spoke properly about Frankfurt, might have been around the Dortmund game, the 3-3 earlier season, can't quite recall. But yeah, we were talking about the qualities that they have with the likes of Larsson winning balls in midfield. Goetze was absolutely fantastic in that in a creative role against Bayern, and the front three of Shaibi, Marmoush, and Ansgar Knauf, once again showing how destructive they can be up front. So absolutely deserved, and it just goes to show that when at that level, when things do go wrong, and they're exploited as well as Frankfurt did, then even if you're Bayern Munich, it can quite quickly go in a pretty unrecoverable direction.
It's a lot of here to unpack. I think the midfield in particular, and I was very surprised about Choupo-Moting's start over Thomas Müller here, and the thought that I have here is that coaches have tried in the past to sort of assert themselves over Thomas Müller, right? Whether it was Carlo Ancelotti, whether it was Niko Kovac, Hansi Flick, of course, didn't do it. Julian Nagelsmann at times tried it. The result has always been the same, right? That sooner or later, Thomas Müller used his influence over the club to dispose of the head coach. And I think Thomas Tuchel here walks a very fine line in that if the results are right, I think no one is going to complain here, including Thomas Müller, who is probably understanding of his advancing age and his changing role. But, you know, that is something, I think that is a can of worms that you open, and at the moment results go bad, which they might now here, the next game is against Stuttgart, you get yourself into a situation where it's going to become difficult. And I think another thing that I think is really important here, and I spent a lot of time thinking about, is what Thomas Tuchel has done with this midfield at Bayern Munich, right? There's Leon Goretzka and Joshua Kimmich. I spoke to a source about this today, and this person has described him as non-existent in this game. And those two were the foundation of a Bayern Munich side that won the Champions League in 2020, right? Of course, there was a certain Thiago playing in midfield there as well, and I think that is this is sort of player that they're missing at the moment. But Thomas Tuchel with the transfer policy at Bayern Munich heavily damaged both those midfielders, you know, undermined them and undermined their potential. And I think that is something that is a situation that Thomas Tuchel very much has created here. And, you know, you add the holes in defense. It just seems so porous at the moment. I mean, Stefan, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, right? That it's just the balance here. And you mentioned that not a single defender has improved under Thomas Tuchel. But I would actually add that the midfielders have actually gotten worse as well.
Yeah, it's obviously been a huge topic at Bayern. It was a huge source of interest and intrigue and frustration in the summer transfer window. They obviously went all in to try and get Paulinho from Fulham, which didn't work out. Ryan Gravenberch then ends up leaving out the back door. and leaves them in a very tricky position. Not to mention the fact, which probably understated, is that Konrad Laimer, who is the backup midfielder, has spent most of, if not all, the season playing defence. And he was once again kind of drafted in this game because Mazraoui was brought off because he wasn't deemed good enough. And I think it just kind of goes to show the kind of issues across this entire squad, really. They need a new right back, they need a new goalkeeper, they certainly need a central midfielder or two. And whether Thomas Müller simply wasn't fit enough for this game, or, Tuchel has decided that he's no longer reliable, the fact that, you know, him, the player he turns to when he doesn't feel comfortable starting Musiala, who, let's be honest, has also been quite hot and cold this season, probably overplayed last year, to be honest, but the fact if they don't start him, he turns to someone like Choupo-Moting. And I think it's just quite startling that, you know, we talked about defence being at fault and midfield being at fault. If you actually look at that forward line, 37 of the 44 league goals they've scored this season have come from Leroy Sané or Harry Kane, in the sense that they've either scored or created them. And I think there's probably a very strong case that the two of them have really kind of papered over the cracks at Bayern. And, you know, that was certainly the case in this game, where Harry Kane came very close to scoring when it was an outstanding block by one of the Frankfurt defenders. I forgot who it was. It's close range. And, you know, this maybe explains why Bayern were so intent on signing, you know, that young Spanish winger that we talked about last week, Manu, because, you know, you look at Serge Gnabry, you look at Kingsley Coman, you look at Choupo-Moting, Thomas Müller. That's four players there who maybe are capable of doing something on their day, but whether Tuchel can actually rely on them over the course of a season is certainly quite questionable. And, you know, I'm sure some Bayern fans would argue that they were all perfectly good players until Thomas Tuchel arrived, but that's kind of the problem the club that has to face, whether they bring in another head coach and get the best out of these players, or they move the players on and bring in new ones that the coach wants and he thinks he can get the best out of. And that's the kind of tricky situation that Bayern now find themselves in, because, you know, the intriguing thing here is that they're now, you know, they're obviously now 4 points off Leverkusen in the league table. They have that point in hand, but...
No, they have a game in hand. They don't have any points in hand.
Sorry, right? A game in hand. Apologies.
Let's don't let them win. Like, it's not. Let's don't assume they actually beat Union Berlin in January.
No, well, this is the point I was about to make here. That whereas in previous seasons you would just assume that Bayern would make up those points, you now question whether they can go to Stuttgart, go to Leverkusen, Leipzig, Frankfurt, whoever else, you know, and actually pick up the points they have to win to kind of really hammer home this league title, because it's just problems all over that pitch. And God knows we've got plenty of Bayern fans who are in our subscribers list who comment on this in the forum every week, and there's plenty of them who've been fed up with Tuchel for a long, long time, and this is exactly
what... Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today
at shopify.com/records.
Why?
Yeah, I guess that's the question then, guys. What will happen next, right? I mean, the game next weekend or this weekend is at home against VfB Stuttgart. Of course, Matt, I'm sorry, you already mentioned it, but they have that in-between game against Man United where I actually would put money on them knocking out United out of Europe altogether.
See, do you know what?
I mean, let's not carry away. It wouldn't be by me knocking United out of Europe. We've put ourselves in that position.
I guess it'd be the final nail in the coffin.
Exactly.
Do you know what? I'm going to put my neck out here and I say it's going to be a difficult game for Bayern because...
Yeah, but they're still going to win.
I don't know. If I'm being honest, because Man United gave them a scare in that last game. Man United have a point to prove. Whether they can or can is up for debate.
Man United, in that game, it was a 4-3 result, but it would never look like a game that United were going to win.
Yeah, but it looked like a game in which Man United could score at any point. And that's the issue I have with this Bayern team. Anyone can score against them. And for all of Man United's faults, they still have players who can score goals. It's just the defence. It seems to be the issue, much like Bayern. So it should be an entertaining match. But I think it would be to this Bayern team right now.
I think it will be an entertaining game, purely because United do have to go at them. And as you said, United are hot and cold. They can go, you know, away to Everton, score three. They can create a heap of chances against Chelsea, and yet they're also capable of simply not turning up whatsoever. So the only thing that concerns me is that I think if Bayern Munich were to rock up in Manchester and play any sort of anything resembling high octane, aggressive pressing football, United simply can't handle that. But that's I suppose that's more for Tuesday night. I just wanted to come back on a couple of things that Stefan was saying, and particularly regarding the transfers and the extent to which Thomas Tuchel's to blame for that. And I mean, so it's my point is that I don't think he is. I think you can. We're talking about the gaps in the centre of the park. It wasn't Thomas Tuchel that failed to land Paulinho in.
No. But Matt, he was sitting on that transfer committee.
Yes, true. But I mean, you also said that you've got people who have been upset for Thomas Tuchel for a long time. I mean, you're talking 8 months. No one's been upset at Tuchel for a long time. He's not been there for a long time. I know it's an easy way out, but I'm just trying to defend Thomas Tuchel a little bit here. I think it needs pointing out that there are bigger issues at Bayern at the moment. That's not absolving Thomas Tuchel completely from blame. I think it's right to point out that defensively they're all over the place. But then again, is it Thomas Tuchel's fault that Alphonso Davies simply hasn't developed? Is it his fault that Mazraoui was brought in? He's clearly not a top level right back. So I think you can absolve Thomas Tuchel from a little bit of blame there. Not all of it, because I also find the decision to start triple promoting in a number 10 role ahead of Thomas Müller baffling. And I totally agree that I don't think he's getting the best out of, I don't think he's getting the balance right with Goretzka and Kimmich in midfield either. And so I agree with all that. I just don't think we should get carried away, basically. And I know that is a bit of a tendency in Munich, that whenever Bayern Munich lose one game, and it is only the third this year, it's actually the second, because that Super Cup simply doesn't count. And it seems that the DFA Pokal doesn't count for Bayern Munich these days anyway.
I disagree with that. This is a club that wants to win everything.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm only joking on that one. But it was only their... first... Bundesliga defeat of the season? I'm missing one. Yeah, exactly. First defeat of the season. You've got that game in hand against Union Berlin coming up. The Bayern team, you would think, again, I can't predict the future, but you would think that the Bayern team that plays Union, given that it's been put back to January the 24th, I believe, it is potentially going to be a lot stronger. Obviously, big if, depending on how the winter transfer window goes, but you'd think it would be a much stronger Bayern team which plays Union. I think it's valid, particularly Bayern in their current form, to point out how are they going to fare against the top teams. They've already been given a scare by Leverkusen at home, they face Stuttgart at home next week, I think that does help. Stuttgart are on form; they have been impressive, but particularly at home. So I think the fact that Bayern are playing them in this half of the season at home is an advantage. So, come the second half of the season when Bayern do go away to Leverkusen and away to Stuttgart, they you would think they would be in better form, depending on how things progress in the boardroom. And again, it's not completely to absolve Thomas Tuchel of all blame. I know that he also has a serious say on the transfer committee and all that, but Christoph Freund has only been in the job as well for a few months. And so is Jan Christian Dries in his CEO role. There were complete wholesale changes literally 30 seconds after the final whistle blew in Cologne last season. So I think it's only easy to then jump on one defeat, as heavy as it was, and suddenly, you know, suddenly claim that everyone's been critical of Thomas Tuchel for a long time, which, like I said, they haven't, because he's not been there a long time. And Bayern Munich will be a completely different team come the new year. Again, that's not to say that everything's going to be okay and that everything's going swimmingly. That's not the point. And they've also qualified for the Champions League with two games to spare. So let's leave the church in the village a little bit, as the Germans say.
Kirche im Dorf lassen. You're quite right. I think a lot of the criticism comes from last season as well, right, when they almost gambled away the title, and then Dortmund basically handed it to them. I wouldn't say on a silver platter, because the title is the silver platter, but you get the idea here. I think it's going to be hugely fascinating how Christoph Freund will navigate this transfer window. He was, of course, on Doppelpass yesterday, where he spoke in great length. Doppelpass, for those who don't know, is a very popular roundtable discussion that takes place every Sunday morning in Munich. They bring together a bunch of people, mostly ex-football players, who say a bunch of dumb stuff, and then a few guests who actually know some things. And Christoph Freund was one of the guests that knows something. And he said, a lot will happen in January. I'm paraphrasing here. They then conclude the show with, I think, what is the best Bavarian tradition, and drinking Weissbier. I think that's the best breakfast drink you can have, a fantastic cocktail. But you know what? I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what Freund will do. And reading between the lines, I'm not actually certain Palinha is still the number one target here. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Freund does something like he did with Saragossa, and also do it in a speed and a manner which would suggest to me that we'll find out 12 hours before that it has happened, right? Or literally find out once the paper, the ink on the paper is dry. But I think this is going to be a hugely fascinating window, and it will be a huge test for him to see if he can fill those holes that certainly exist in that squad. Obviously on the shopping list is a fullback, left and right, a center back, a defensive midfielder. And yes, of course, Union Berlin, Bayern will be probably in a better position by January when they play Union Berlin. But you also have to remember, these transfers have to be A, a fit, and B, you have to make them gel into the squad. Right, it's not like you're just dropping in these guys and they're going to work right away. And also, we remember they signed João Cancelo from Manchester City last year, and the first few games were fantastic, and then it just fizzled out. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think
it's.
Maybe just to kind of put a bow on this before we move on to other games. The interesting thing I think going forwards, and look, maybe this is a discussion for the transfer show, but you've also got Christoph Freund, who's going in front of the cameras. He's explaining things and obviously beginning to kind of pull the strings at Bayern, as we saw with the signing last week. I'll just be intrigued to see how his growing influence over the club and the direction he wants to take the squad in, how much that lines up with what Thomas Tuchel wants. Because as we've seen Tuchel's very good, or has been very good at certain clubs when everything is kind of, you know, gone along to his script, or he's always gotten what he wants, for good and for bad. You know, we can go all the way back to the time at Dortmund when he quite justifiably basically walked out because he knew that he was never going to be able to build a squad there because of the manner in which they sell players. But he maybe flipped that on his head and say, well, if Bayern are now going to kind of start developing and signing players along the kind of Red Bull model, then, you know, Thomas Tuchel might turn around and say, I didn't join Bayern Munich to be Marco Rosa. I joined Bayern Munich to be Carlo Ancelotti or Real Madrid or whatever else. I want a ready-made squad that can win the Champions League every year. I'm not here to develop your 22-year-olds or 23-year-olds. So I'm purely speculating here. I'm sure the both of them got on very well. But that kind of transition might cause a few kind of growing pains, which would be interesting to see how it works out.
I think they're all good points, but I mean, again, none of us know exactly, but you know, we can only sort of speculate based on the little sort of scraps of info we get here and there and reading between the lines. But by all accounts, over the past 8-9 months, and ever since he had the initial discussions with Bayern, Thomas Tuchel's been extremely close to Uli Hoeneß. That relationship does seem to be a good one, although it's actually not one which I would have considered to have had much hope, actually. If you'd have asked me maybe 3 or 4 years ago, how would those two characters work together? Probably quite difficult, but probably with some difficulty. But again, that does seem to be a relationship which exists. I suppose ultimately we don't know how the two of them are going to how Tuchel and Christoph Freund are going to dovetail in their workings within the club.
I have some insight on that.
Go on,
there. I know from people who are close to both that it hasn't always been easy, and that at least at first Tuchel wasn't 100% happy with this appointment and getting forced out of the transfer board and handing it over to someone who he sees as his junior. So, you know, it isn't exactly a relationship that is 100%. It's been described as difficult at first and turned into professional.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. We'll see how it develops. Because I think Stefan's right to point out the hierarchies and the structures within which Thomas Tuchel's worked in the past. I think probably most comfortable was when he was at Chelsea with the sporting director Emilia Nikolinovskaya beneath Abramovich. In those years, he had a very good relationship with Petr Cech, was involved in whatever the names of the roles were. He was involved as well there, and then he had the corresponding problems at PSG for obvious reasons. Fell out with Leonardo, didn't he? On quite a spectacular scale, I believe. And we'll be interested to see where it goes. We're not here to look in glass balls and predict the future, I suppose. But yeah, it will be interesting.
What we can do, though, we can look into. Well, you already mentioned the immediate future, which is Manchester United. But we can also look already ahead of the next match day, and they're going to play a Stuttgart side that for a full 45 minutes lit fireworks against Bayer Leverkusen, and actually played a Leverkusen side that, you know, you can make an argument is maybe the best team in European football, or has been for large stretches, right? Some would say maybe the title is now gone and moved to Spain, to Girona, who are doing unbelievable things there. But, you know, this Leverkusen side has been very, very good to start the Bundesliga campaign. And for 45 minutes, Stuttgart played them off the park. I was at this game yesterday. The last time I was in Stuttgart, guys, was when they were on the verge of relegation and then played an incredible game against Hamburg SV. And what struck me, that game against Leverkusen, the first 45 minutes was exactly the same blueprint against HSV. Even the jerseys were the same because Leverkusen were playing in blue. Right.
I heard you say this at the time, Manu, but I need to just a little point of order. Leverkusen were playing in turquoise, and if there's any Hamburg fans listening to that, that's absolutely not the same color.
It was a shade of blue. It was a shade of blue. Give me that. You know, you can be creative with the truth. Anyways,
if you say so.
But you know what? In terms of the way and the style that they played, I just struck me how true, how much Sebastian Hoeneß found a way in which he wants his team to play. And it doesn't matter what your opponent is, he sticks to it, right? Because Leverkusen is obviously a much better team. And yes, they added some pieces that have probably helped Hoeneß play the style of football he wants to play. But it's just, I just find it so hugely impressive how he has a playing philosophy in place. And no matter the opponent, he plays that sort of football. And then, of course, what I also thought was really impressive, you know, when he realized both Undav and Guirassy, or maybe that was the plan to begin with, and Undav was just hurt at the start of the season. But when Undav came back and started scoring during the time when Guirassy was out, and then Guirassy came back from his injury, he found space for both of them, right? And I think I was going through that match and my thoughts, and there was a few things that, you know, I pointed out, and I pointed them out in the Monday bulletin as well, if you want to read back on that. The fact that the Stuttgart side has a lot of the things that Bayern Munich would like to have. First of all, was a very, very, very stable defensive midfield in Angelo Stiller and Carrasco, right? And I think that allows them to play that sort of football. But, you know, yes, Leverkusen came back in the second half. They equalized through a brilliant Florian Wirtz, but this Stuttgart side, I think if they play this way in Munich, Matt, I think they have a chance there.
Absolutely. I think for the first time this season, Leverkusen were faced with not just an aggression in opposition pressing, which they struggled to handle, but I think perhaps more importantly, a team who could not just press so aggressively and so consistently across the pitch and win the ball so high, but also have the sheer numbers and the sheer quality going forward to actually capitalise on that and really not just win the ball, but create serious chances out of it. I think, particularly in the first half, Leverkusen had Lukas Chodetski in goal to thank that it wasn't 2-3 or perhaps even 4. The reason for that is when you just touched on yourself, the fact that Sebastian Hoeneß has managed to find a role in the team, not just for a Guirassy or a Dennis Undav as a bit of a backup, but for both. And then if need be, as was in the second half, to bring on the likes of Silas off the bench. And I think as we've seen this season down the left, Chris Furlish has been, for me, one of the absolute revelations of the season in the entire league altogether. So I think that was, I think that was key. Probably the first time that Leverkusen faced that intensity, and also against a team who could really capitalise and do something once they won the ball in dangerous positions.
It's hugely impressive. I think that it's just the entire philosophy and everything that's happening around Stuttgart. I spoke to the two coaches as well, and Stefan, I think you might find this interesting. Javi Alonso admitted at halftime that he got loud and had to... He said he didn't have to yell, but he said he had to get a little bit louder. And then he said after the game, even though, you know, they managed to get the equalizer, but they dropped another 2 points. I think what hit bothered him that for now, for 180 minutes, they were kind of held by an opponent, right? Dortmund did it to them. Although they kind of played like a relegation candidate, not like a championship candidate. And now Stuttgart also managed to just hold them to quote-unquote one goal, right? And Alonso kind of hinted that after the game that was something that he was concerned about and something that he will have to express, because there's tendencies, as he says, that he thinks he has to guide against. You spoke to him. How do you think he's going to do that?
Yeah, I think it was such a fascinating test of, you know, the kind of Xabi Alonso football that we've been seeing at Leverkusen this season, because not for the first time in the last couple of weeks, really. I guess we saw something similar against Dortmund. Obviously, Dortmund, scored early and then went very defensively, whereas, you know, Stuttgart scored early and then kept attacking. But it was very much both a case of Leverkusen conceded early and then having to kind of work their way back into the game, or rather to exert their control over the game. And I mean, even though Alonso maybe wasn't too happy at halftime, and I know he said after the game that, they might have to look at new solutions to the problems that are facing them, I actually think it was actually a good testament of how well these tactics do work, because The manner in which they really controlled the second half, I thought, was really impressive. You could definitely argue that Stuttgart were getting very tired. They were tiring from their obviously intense pressing, intense attacking. But by maybe the 70th minute onwards, it was really one-way traffic. And in many ways, Leverkusen maybe could have went on to win the game, to be honest with you. So I would be too downhearted or disheartened if I was a Leverkusen fan. Yeah, it's maybe 2 points dropped, but I think in the grand scheme of things, and the manner in which we've just spoke about how Bayern are perfectly capable of dropping points in a similar fixture, I think to go away to Stuttgart, go a goal behind and then still leave with a point is actually still pretty impressive. And, you know, I was kind of suggesting this in the chat at the time, but I just looked it up there when you guys were talking that in terms of like where or when rather Leverkusen score the goals, there is a kind of stronger emphasis on their goals scored in the second half. So 22 of their 39, which I admittedly is not a huge amount, but it's maybe like 60-40 in favour of the second half of games where they tend to do score the goals. And it definitely feels, and maybe it's just, you know, recency bias because of the Dortmund game we watched a few weeks ago, but the manner in which they have been able to kind of squeeze and contort these games, and actually they did the same thing against Bayern Munich now that I think about it, where Bayern took an early lead, looked like they're going to run away with it, but then by the end of the 90 minutes, Leverkusen actually looked like the stronger team and possibly should have won that game too. I think it was a good result. I think it was a good testament of both teams. I think it was the definition of a game of two halves, or that old cliche, whatever you want to call it. But I think on the whole, Leverkusen can actually be really happy with a point here.
I think what's actually key, and Stefan was touching out there, that it was, I think, probably for the second time this season, most impressively, that we've seen the Xabi Alonso team really dictate the pace of the game and take control of when they want more dynamism in the game or to really actively and intentionally take that sting out of it. I thought it was interesting to hear that, because I actually only saw the second half. It's interesting to see that, or to hear that Alonso admitted that he got loud and with his team at half time. Having heard that, I think that makes the first 3 or 4 minutes of the second half a lot more logical, because they absolutely came out on fire, or at least in particular Florian Wirtz did. I think I turned on the game in the second half, having been doing other stuff, having seen people on social media and in some of our chats saying what a fantastic game it had been and how furiously Stuttgart had come out at Leverkusen. I was thinking, okay, I'll have a bit of this. Fancy watching the second half of this. And the way that particularly Florian Wirtz started, thinking this in the first 2 minutes of the second half, he had that solo run slash sort of bulldozer run through the middle of the park, where he's dribbled and battled his way past 3 or 4 Stuttgart defenders, and then 2 minutes later he's got on the end of Victor Boniface's cross to equalise. So he's taken the second half really, really by the scrap of the neck. But then I actually thought it doesn't make it a bad second half, but it absolutely wasn't what I'd been hearing from people from the first half, because the dynamism and the sting and the aggression and the pace really seemed to have been, I thought, taken out of the game massively. And I think on balance, I didn't think at the time, but I actually think that's to Leverkusen's credit and to Xabi Alonso's credit that they've done that. I don't think it was their most offensively impressive half of football that I've seen from this season. I don't think it was. I didn't get the impression that they were moving the ball as quickly as they normally do, that they were so quick in transition as they normally are. However, they did have a lot of control. It seemed very cagey. It seemed extremely cautious. And I wonder if that was a result of both teams just being a bit psychologically wary of each other. Leverkusen wary, having literally just seen at first hand what Stuttgart could do to them after that first half. And perhaps Stuttgart having then seen the way Leverkusen came out and equalised so quickly, also withdrawing a lot into their shell. Which is, again, not a criticism of either team, but I thought demonstrated a tactical maturity pass of both teams, but particularly from Leverkusen, to be able to dictate the extent to which they inject some dynamism into the game or take it out. And we saw that in Munich as well. That's also how they managed to silenced the crowd and gets control over that game after going behind early. And yeah, I thought a similar effect was at play here. 1-1 is a good result. I think again it's beyond their control, but you probably think, you know, given the way other results went, given that Bayern lost and that Dortmund lost, that perhaps both sides, given the way the game went, would have probably preferred. Yeah, well, obviously preferred 3, but 3 points would have been even more important given other results. But there's still a long way to go. So yeah, it really was an interesting game, and definitely a game of two halves. But yeah, tactically of quite a mature level.
Hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting actions and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions, with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and use our promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Yeah, so Stuttgart's XG after the first half was 3.05. And Hoeneß did lament after the game that they should have probably wrapped the game up in the first half, right? They were more than capable of scoring 3 goals in the first half. And I don't think Leverkusen would have come back from that, right? I have the sense that, to some extent, Guirassy's golden form has come to an end. There was a chance that he would have probably buried when he was on that hot streak. Right. So it's gotten a little bit more difficult for them to score goals, although, you know, they still have Führich, which, of course, he was the goal scorer, and Undav is in good form as well. But, you know, that XG, not converting that XG into more goals in the first half, is essentially what cost them, I think, the 3 points there. And then Hoeneß admitted that based on how the second half went, you know, it was a more than deserved draw because of the way Leverkusen essentially came back and scored the equalizer right away. What struck me, and I think this makes them both teams so very different than Bayern Munich, is that they're so capable of controlling the midfield, even if they're playing against an opponent that is dominating them in other areas. And that's actually, I think, essentially why the game got shut down the last 20 minutes. Is because in Carasso and Stiller, Stuttgart have two central midfielders that can, you know, add that necessary compactness in midfield that allows them to kind of stem the flow of an opponent. And then Leverkusen, of course, can do exactly the same thing with Xhaka and Palacios. And I think that is really the difference here, maybe, between those two teams and other top teams in the Bundesliga at the moment. I'm thinking about Bayern, Dortmund, and maybe even Leipzig at times, right? That are more than capable of playing that fluid attacking style, but just don't have that hold of the center of the park. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but you could make a pretty strong argument that those two teams are the two best teams in Germany at the moment.
I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to Dortmund in a sec. I mean, I know we will, but you're absolutely right on the midfield. I mean, time and time again this season, Borussia Dortmund's midfield has been completely bypassed. Most recently, I was at the game against, what was my last Dortmund game? Gladbach, when obviously Gladbach went 2-0 in the first half, and I made the point to Edin Terzic, I suppose, as politely as I could. That, you know, this is a pattern that we saw against Bayern Munich too, of teams being able to just bypass that dominant midfield. But yeah, you're right to say that, particularly on that level, Stuttgart and Leverkusen probably do have the two best central midfield out of it. Although I do think there's also a lot of potential there from Red Bull as well, particularly the way Xavi Schlager played at the weekend. But yeah, we'll come on to that in a bit, I suppose.
We should come on to it now, because we're running out of time.
Look at that for a crossover. It's brilliant.
Yeah, we should talk about that right away, because we have about 10 minutes. And we completely forgot that there was another top spiel, Dortmund and Leipzig. Guys,
hey, no wonder all these investors are queuing up to invest in the Bundesliga.
We're going to have it again.
Top spieler everywhere.
We're going to have it again next week, just so you know. So Dortmund lose to Leipzig. I'm leaning very far out of the window here and say this is it for Dortmund and the title race.
I thought you were going to say this is it for Dortmund and Ethan Terzic. Which is probably the question that most fans are talking about.
Although Stefan, you shot out a stat this weekend, saying this is actually 3 more points than they had last year.
No, they have the same amount of points. Oh, I think it was, but never mind.
Last week or before this week's game. I think.
Maybe the weekends are merging into one here.
No, I think it was that after this match. I think I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure they got the same points tally, but are actually one position higher than they were last season.
Maybe it was that, yeah.
But we have to remember as well that last season's start was truly catastrophic. So, you know, it's not exactly a glowing endorsement of this team. It was just another kind of typical Dortmund versus a top four side performance, and we've just kind of grown to become quite used to these now, at least I have. I guess against the kind of European giants, they can sit deep and they can try and play stubbornly and pick off results, and to a large extent that's palatable, but you know, there's no way that Leipzig can come to the Westfalenstadion and Dortmund can't play attacking football. And we tried to do that, and within, like, what, 10 minutes, 13 minutes, Leipzig had cut them wide open. And, I mean, I just kind of want to focus in on that kind of Mats Hummels red card for a moment, because there's two things that I'm quite baffled by. One was his decision to make that challenge when Openda was already through on goal, because maybe it comes down to instinct, but you would think a defender of that experience would think it's better for him to just score and us to continue the game with 11 men than for me to get sent off and give away a penalty 13 minutes into this game. No, I know he didn't get sent off for the penalty. He got sent off after VAR spent about 8 minutes deciding whether it was a penalty or not. And it was another farcical nonsense from that system, which I just want to make a point of, because I hate it, and it was an absolute nonsense. The actual people, if I'm not mistaken, in the stadium, at least from my position at home, thought VAR was looking back to see if Openda was actually offside at the start of the play, and then the referee decides it's not a penalty, it's a free kick, which I still think is actually quite a contentious call. And then, of course, Mats Hummels goes from giving away a penalty, which is a yellow card offence, to being the last man, which becomes a red card offence. And it was just 10 minutes of stupidity from Mats Hummels and the DFB at large, I suppose. DFL. I don't really know what else to say, to be honest with you. You could just probably take what I said when Dortmund played against Leverkusen or against Bayern or whoever else, copy and paste it. And I think the only other thing I would add is that Leipzig were probably quite fortunate in this game, because I thought they actually played really poorly throughout the game. I thought they were really foolish in letting Dortmund back in the second half. I thought Dortmund played a bit better in the second half. And we actually talked about this going into the match, man. On our previous show, I said, you know, Leipzig haven't exactly been great this season, and it wouldn't surprise me if this game ended in a draw. And it felt for much of the game that Leipzig were doing their absolute best to give Dortmund some sort of leg up in terms of scoring chances. So more chaos at Dortmund, and Leipzig kind of stumble on.
Dortmund is such a fundamentally weird team, and I cannot get my head around this season. If you think you've already discussed the sort of bizarre statistics surrounding their points tally, that despite everything, they have the same, if not very similar, points added to this season. They're actually a place higher up. So you think that's a positive development. However, they're also 11 points off top, and they've got Hoffenheim, Freiburg and Frankfurt breathing down their necks already. You would have thought that given the what can only be described as bang average levels of quality that they have, particularly offensively, you would have thought they would have stood absolutely no chance in the Champions League group, from which they've qualified with one game to spare. So I mean, and nobody saw that one coming. And then as much as the failings against a top four team were just as evident on Saturday. Was it Saturday or Friday?
This game was Saturday.
Saturday night, wasn't it? Yeah, they were as evident as ever. Nevertheless, one thing you can't fault them for this time was the much cited mentality from Borussia Dortmund. I mean, I thought they actually deserved to, you know, let's maybe put the situation with Mats Hummels and his rather foolish actions at the start of the game in brackets to one side for a second, but to then play for what was it, the best part of an hour or probably almost 2 hours, given the amount of VAR of extra time that was added, with 10 men against an RB side, and caused them so many problems, I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. Although even there you have this completely bizarre situation that it wasn't actually the sort of Dortmund weren't causing RB problems in the way they would probably have wanted to. I mean, they did, but the first equaliser came from Niklas Süle, who finished really well but normally wouldn't necessarily be in that position. And even the late chance that they had in the 90 plus 30 second minute of extra time, where they could have equalised again, that also fell to Niklas Süle. So they did have these chances, but they weren't chances which they would have liked to have created themselves, based on, you know, clearly practiced and trained offensive patterns from the training ground. So again, I sort of leave that open as to what you want to make of that. Do you draw the conclusion from that Borussia Dortmund have actually got, yeah, could take a lot of positives from that, and that they can create chances from a variety of different sources, even when they're in a difficult situation down to 10 men for so long? Or do you draw a more negative conclusion that, well, yeah, once again, they didn't have the offensive quality and the offensive ideas and the patterns to cause RB any problems? And that's been really, really familiar for Dortmund all season. Once again, I'm sort of...
I'm sure I know how they'll
sell it, absolutely. And I'm sure it's how Edin Terzic will sell it as well. And Stefan, you sort of joked at the start there, didn't you? That you wondered if it was the last game, or if he's done his job prospects any
damage. They're going to sell us a victory.
So they could.
Matzka has just signed a multi-billion pound deal with the for the Bundesliga. He couldn't on the pitch.
There's nothing signed yet. He's just got the commission.
It's also nothing to do with Matzka anymore, is it? Technically, but that's a different topic. The DFL has new CEOs, although Matzka is on the supervisory board, but that's a different topic. But the fact that Terzic has steered Dortmund through the Champions League group, I mean, that's where money talks. That's where decisions are made. Once it really hits the balance sheet, looking forward to next season, when you don't have that, you know, that extra one game or perhaps two rounds of Champions League football, that's when decisions are made to sort of cut the cord. And I would suggest that as long as Dortmund are in that Champions League second round, which they are, Terzic's job is safe, I would suggest.
And also, as things stand right now, they are in the Champions League even as a fifth place team.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Stefan, go ahead.
I was just going to respond to what Matt was saying about, the players and the performances and the mentality. And I think it's actually such an interesting topic, because it's still very hard to nail down what is and isn't working at Dortmund under Terzic, because it's not the typical case where the team are underperforming because, you know, they don't like the head coach, or the heads have gone down, or their morale's dropped. I completely agree with what Matt's saying. There's still definitely a kind of, there's a work ethic, there's a sense that they all want to work well for Terzic, and I think you can see that in a number of these games, especially the Champions League ones, where everyone is running through brick walls for him. So it's, you know, it's not a black and white thing. It's not he's a good coach, he's a bad coach sort of thing. I think it's just, I guess if I had to kind of try and break it down into smaller parts and try and pinpoint where the issues are, it does feel as though Terzic is obviously a very good man manager, and he's obviously got a very good job of kind of galvanizing the players, and you can tell a lot of them want to play for him. I guess the issue comes that there's not any maybe finer details in that. It still doesn't feel to me like the tactics in this team are evolving or are even really discernible, to be perfectly honest with you. And, you know, it's that old joke that Dortmund are just vibes under Terzic, and it's actually very hard to disprove that theory when you look at the way they play. And, you know, you can then even just go down to the fact that, I mean, the two things that really stood out to me in this game, I know they were a man down, and I guess whatever happened after the 13th minute doesn't really matter, but the manner in which Sulla was done for the Baumgartner goal, and just for anyone who maybe didn't see it, Baumgartner's kind of running through on goal, a counter-attack, and Niklas Sulla just is more or less 3-on-3, and Niklas Sulla, I'm not even sure he was his man, just slide tackles and goes to ground, completely misses the player and the ball, and is out of the game entirely. And, you know, Leipzig then kind of get into the box, pass the ball around, and Baumgartner eventually scores a rebound. And, like, maybe it's not all on Sulla, but watching that play over and over again, anyone would look at that and think, who's this guy, and has he ever played in defence before? And, you know, I thought something similar in the last goal for Poulsen, basically just jinxed past Nico Schlotterbeck as if the guy's like a 34-year-old striker who's found himself in his own box. There's serious questions as to whether these guys are actually good enough to be Dortmund central defenders, in my opinion. And then there's the question as to whether the tactics are getting the best out of the players that Terzic actually has to hand. And one way or another, that's a job for Sebastian Kehl, Vatska, whoever else, to kind of figure out, because either Terzic is a good coach who doesn't have good enough players, or he's got decent players and he's only able to galvanize them to a point without providing the tactical instructions to get more out of them, I think.
If I can just maybe play devil's advocate and defend Terzic and Schlotterbeck in particular there, Stefan, I think you're right. It doesn't look good the way that Yusuf Poulsen simply drops a shoulder and leaves Schlotterbeck for dead. However, I think the slight caveat is that it is quite late on in the game, and by that point, Dortmund had been playing with 10 men for a long period, I suspect he was completely knackered by that point, although it did look very tired and it did look very easy. As for Terzic, I mean, I actually personally do agree with you. I shared the same issues with Terzic, and I've voiced those issues going back over a year now, as to where the next step in Dortmund's offensive tactical evolution is going to come from. If I was to defend him though a little bit, it would be that I am starting to see attempts at it in recent weeks, particularly in the increase in starts for Jamie Bynoe-Gittens. I think that is a key development which Terzic would want to keep building on. He always made the point of how dangerous Jamie Bynoe-Gittens was off the bench for Dortmund last season, which he was. The same applies to an extent to the likes of Moukoko as well and Gio Reyna, but the two of them haven't really been on form this season either, particularly Reyna. But this season, Bynoe-Gittens has become a much more regular starter. And he has, again, I'm not saying he's the finished starter, clearly he has a long way to go, but I do think that him starting down that left-hand side does represent perhaps an inkling of the way in which Terzic would like to start developing things more offensively with Dortmund. I know Gaten scored a really good goal in the San Siro against AC Milan. He, as I recall, I think he did have actually one of the very few shots on goal that Dortmund had in the cup away at Stuttgart when he cut inside onto his left and got a shot away. I mean, admittedly, I'm sort of grasping at straws a little bit there because it was a terrible performance. It wasn't even that good a shot, but it was the sort of glimmer of light that they had. And after Hummels got himself sent off early on, I think, am I right in saying it was Jay Reinel-Gittens who actually paid the price tactically? He was then also taken off during the sort of tactical reshuffle. So again, that's where reality has caught up with them, and I suppose put a spanner in the works for both Terzic, Jay Reinel-Gittens, and Dortmund as a whole offensively for that game. So again, yeah, just a couple of, I suppose, devil's advocate caveats there regarding Dortmund.
It's such an interesting case, isn't it? Because, I mean, we kind of hinted on this. There is things that are going wrong at Borussia Dortmund, and yet this result is so much overshadowed by this red card that it makes it really hard to read anything into it. Obviously, we tried on this episode, but you know, I reckon that internally they will look at this red card and said, like, look, we were still came close of winning this game. But ultimately, and I mean, I was kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek earlier, but like fifth place might be enough to reach the Champions League this season. I'm not convinced this team is good enough, guys, to be a top four side this year, considering the way Leverkusen and Stuttgart have been playing, right? And that ultimately means that reaching the Champions League isn't really in Dortmund's hands anymore. I mean, we're not even talking title challenge here. We're talking Champions League qualification, which is so very fundamental for the business model this club is. And, you know, that is, I think, something that they will have to discuss internally in January, what will need to happen for them to get into the top four. Because right now, the Bundesliga has that fifth spot, right? But that fifth spot is 100% dependent on how Bundesliga teams will do in the spring, right? Because it's the new Champions League model. I think three leagues get an extra spot. And currently the Bundesliga is, I think, first in the UEFA coefficient ranking for the season. That's how they have it. And so, you know, I don't think that's something I would want to rely on if I was a Borussia Dortmund executive, guys. And I think this is a really important question here. Like, do you take the positives from this game that we discussed here? Do you take the negatives, the fact that they lost yet another game against a top side? Regardless of the circumstances, at the end of the day, you don't really look at red cards that influence a game. You look at the points on the board, and there are not enough of them on there right now.
Yeah, I think you could definitely take both at this moment in time. I don't think it's a full-blown crisis by any means, because, look, Dortmund fans can certainly look at it and say, we've had one hell of a start to the season and we're actually only 4 points off fourth and 7 points off Bayern. And, you know, there's still plenty to play for. And if last season taught us anything, it's obviously the case that Dortmund are perfectly capable of, you know, starting the second half of the season and just kind of steamrolling the league to a large extent. Whether lightning can strike twice is, you know, a question for the statisticians maybe, but it might be something that Dortmund fans can cling to. I think more importantly will be a look towards January and to see what the club are willing to do to try and fix these problems. We just talked about how Bayern are in similar issues and how Christoph Freund goes on television and says, we're going to have a busy January window, we've got problems to fix, you know. And that's what we expect of Bayern. When there's trouble at Bayern, they do tend to act quickly, they act decisively, and if that means firing your CEO and sporting director the day after you've won the league, then so be it. My issue with Dortmund in the modern era, and I think where a lot of the frustration for the Dortmund hierarchy comes from, is that they don't have that same kind of resolution when it comes to spending money to kind of fix the problems. And I think if you're sitting on that board at Dortmund and you're desperately trying to think of ways to kind of convince fans that Terzic is the head coach to keep, the way you do that is by going out in January and spending 30, 40 million euros on a couple of fullbacks, a defensive midfielder, and then see if they make a difference. Because I think that deal on Saturday showed, and just about every game against a decent team this year is that Dortmund's fullbacks are a mess, and that Salihos-Chan simply isn't good enough to be a centre midfielder for Dortmund. He seems like he works very hard. He seems like he's a great team player. I'm sure he's a great guy, but watching him play in that match was just so I don't know. It was just disheartening, to be perfectly honest with you. The way he couldn't get a touch, he couldn't keep pace, he couldn't, unless he was running into someone, which arguably is maybe part of his job at Dortmund. But they just need better players in these positions, and maybe a good defensive midfielder fixes the problems in defence. Maybe some good fullbacks fix the problems in attack. You know, these things may have a way of fixing themselves, and then Dortmund can obviously push on the second half of the season. They'll have a Champions League last 16 to have some fun with, and all of a sudden things will look a little rosier. But that all depends on the club spending the money that they have to spend to fix these problems.
And that's where, I mean, you mentioned the people are waiting with bated breath to see what sort of role Christoph Freund plays in his first big winter transfer window this January. I think similarly in Dortmund, all eyes on Sebastian Kehl. He's been in the job for longer than his counterpart in Munich. And
Matt, if he's still in the job in January, that is.
Yes, it will do that too. Guys, absolutely, we will have to discuss transfers. Unfortunately, we're also in an hour and 10 minutes of recording, which I think is probably the longest podcast I've done on this in a long time. In other words, transfers for the transfer show. We're going to have to wrap this up. Matt, Stefan, I know this is, we had three massive, massive games this weekend. And so we had a lot to discuss. I think we can discuss a lot of this for a lot longer, and we will on different shows. Which is why you should subscribe. So programming notes, of course, we're going to have something on the DFL later this week. We have the Champions League games to wrap up as well. And then, of course, then we're going to dive straight into the transfer window, which means that we're probably going to have some breaking news over January as well with transfers. We're going to see what Bayern Munich and Dortmund will do to catch up with the likes of Stuttgart and Leverkusen, who seem to be just better positioned than the two of them. So, yeah, stay tuned. Guys, this is brought to you by Bet Online. Matt, Stefan, I'm going to keep this really quick. Thanks for coming on. We'll be back soon. Until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.